Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. It's a busy week for us. Yes, it's Eurovision week and we're off to Liverpool tomorrow. And we'll be boring you with that fact for the rest of the day. No, it's really exciting. We're going over there to capture some of the madness that is the Eurovision Song Contest. And of course, hook up with our hopes, Wild Youth, who are flying the Irish flag this year. And we'll be meeting up with them and loads of other people as well. That's tomorrow. And today, we're going to be in the company of Niamh Kavanagh and Brian Kennedy, both who flew the flag in the past and did hugely well. Niamh winning and Brian coming 9th or 10th. Do you know that Brian Kennedy holds the record? Well, it's not a record, but he's down in the annals of Eurovision history, because when he sang, it was the 1,000th song in the Eurovision Song Contest. So there you go. I don't know if he knows that himself or if he has a t-shirt that says that. But anyway, we're going to be talking to them and, of course, Conor Pope, because it's Monday. And Sophie White's in. Her 7th book, My Hot Friend. Marion Keyes says of the book, extremely funny and refreshingly honest about the unacknowledged complexity of female friendship. And it's a thing we've spoken about before on this show with Elizabeth Day. And it's a thing that everyone seems to be talking about. Some people are saying that when a friendship, which are, you know, between two women, falls apart, it's worse than a romantic relationship falling apart. And some of that is in the book, My Hot Friend. We're talking to Sophie White about that. And we say happy birthday today to Sir David Attenborough. He's 97 today. Amazing. And to mark the occasion, the BBC has shared a poignant 97-second film, a second for every one of his years. A clip from the natural historian's incredible career have all been pieced together. It's amazing to see. He can be seen as a young man alongside snapshots from the current day. He's been involved over the years in 100 documentaries, many of them for the BBC. He joined the BBC as a trainee back in 1952. So that's 50 and 20. That's 71 years ago. Wow. So he's been at it since then. He has previously shut down any possible rumours of retirement. I'm only 97, he said. No, I don't know if he said that. How long do I plan to keep going? As long as I'm vertical and people ask me to do it, he told the Sun newspaper. It's a marvellous time. Why would I suddenly say don't bother? He added, I see no reason whatsoever why I can't live past 100. Earth has enough wonders to make more than 3 Planet Earth series. So happy birthday, Sir David Attenborough. Of course, another famous environmentalist is the new king, King Charles III. And we know this because we were told, I don't know if you watched the coronation concert last night, but as a device, I think partly to allow them to shift on acts and shift off acts, they had these Did You Know recorded segments where we were told things about Charles that we may not have known. Wow, he's multi-talented. He's a magician. He's a musician. He can play the cello, the piano and something else. He is a pilot, qualified pilot. He's a very good artist. And it went on and on and on. And you had people like Richard E. Grant and Tom Jones all coming on. And even Tom Cruise, from one pilot to another. But Tom wouldn't be satisfied to set up a camera in his living room and just do a piece to camera. No, 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 no. That wouldn't be Tom Cruise. He had to do it from an airplane with his name just typed nicely under the window. And of course, there had to be another airplane beside him, flying alongside him with a camera in it and taking the shot of Tom Cruise wishing the new king well. Like, he must do 5 of those, you know. Go, what are we doing today? Oh, yeah, you have to say good luck to the new king of England. And then you want to say hello to that guy that you met. Maybe say happy retirement to James Corden, all those. And he goes up in his plane, your man is in the camera and he's doing all of them. He has them all there. That's the king one done. OK, let's do James Corden on this pass. And he comes back around and go, James, good luck in retirement. Always be a friend to me. Tom Cruise. But there were some great performances. And Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog had a cameo in it. That was great. Take That, like, you know, I wouldn't be a self-confessed Take That fan, but they were perfect for last night. They're very English. The crowd loved them. They're great songs, and all the songs fitted the occasion. And they finished off with Never Forget. Started off with the boys from the army band playing it on trumpets, I think. Then there was the young boy singers doing the Never Forget part. Then there was the drummers from the army band, and then they came on stage and they exploded, and it was brilliant, and there was choirs, all sorts of things. And then I didn't watch much of it, but it was on as I passed through the room, which is a lie because you can't pass through the room, you have to go into it. But I was on anyway on Saturday, and I was looking at a bit of it. And like a lot of people have said, it was just like a long mass, very somber, and the king himself particularly somber. I, for some reason, was fixated on the crowns because I know how much they weigh, and I'd read an awful lot about the crowns. And when they put it on, he looked very uncomfortable under the weight of the crown, five pounds in weight. And then two of the lads, as in two, they could have been bishops or priests, they had to help him up out of the throne. And then he was so concentrating on keeping the weight balanced that he couldn't, you know, on those things when you can't move, you know, as if you have a really bad crick in your neck, you can't look right or left, you can only do it by moving your eyes. So he couldn't even, you know, turn around and give a thumbs up to Camilla as he passed by her, or wink at one of his grandchildren. Couldn't do any of that. It was just straight ahead. Keep this going, lads, keep this going. But the star of the show, I think, well, there are two stars for me. Little Louis, four, didn't know what was going on, really. Granddad's getting a crown on his head. There's a lot of singing. But he was just having the crack until he wasn't. And then he was bored. But the typical four-year-old stuff, which is great. And then Penny Mordaunt. I was wondering who she was. You know, she's the leader of the House of Commons and Lord President in the Council. Very important woman. And she was carrying a sword, or maybe two swords, in front of the procession. And she was wearing an outfit in teal that looked like it was part of a sci-fi movie. You know, if you saw her getting off a spaceship, involved in some intergalactic sort of group as an envoy, some ambassador to try and settle some war between Vlozidar and Dooby Dooby, you'd say, yeah, that's good. That costume suits. It was teal, a suit, and then there was gold sort of leafing around the collar. And she looked amazing. And seemingly she's been in training for doing press-ups and all sorts of things, because the sword weighed 3 pounds or 3 kilograms?
Kilos.
3 kilos, right. And she had to carry it. But the outfit looked amazing. There was just something about it. And she stood out because all the others were over the top, dated sort of regal stuff. That's, you know, the ceremonial garb that they have to wear on these occasions. And this was a sort of a modern take on that, and it worked well. Anyway, what did you think? Or were you watching it, or would you prefer to be watching the GAA or out mowing the lawn or whatever? Speaking of lawns and getting out there and getting your hands dirty, which I did over the weekend, it's good, they say now, to let your child get grubby. I've suspected this for a long time. Right back to the days of Granny Bonner, when you'd drop a sweet on the ground and you'd be going, oh, it can't be done. And Granny Bonner would say, it's not what I lost, but what I gained. And over the years, just reading various things, like, you know, it's good for our immune system to have a few of the old creepy crawlies, you know, little things, little bit of dirt in there, and our immune system sort of gets all shores up. Anyway, there's a piece in the papers today. Seemingly, children and teenagers from wealthier backgrounds are more likely to suffer from inflammatory bowel disease, analysis found, as are those exposed to antibiotics before the age of 5 and those who eat a lot of processed and sugary food but not enough vegetables. And the thinking in part of it is that if you're getting the old dirty bits and you're swallowing them down, that the immune system is built up, which is a good thing. And then in later life, you don't get the inflammatory bowel disease. So there you go. Let them out and about and get down and dirty. That's the message from there. It's great. We're going to Liverpool tomorrow, and we've got a special message from Jurgen Klopp. He's invited us over and he's welcomed us to Liverpool, which is very nice because busy man. They won over the weekend, 1-0. So it was nice of Jurgen to say, you know, welcome to Liverpool.
Hello.
Thank you.
Eurovision in Liverpool.
Yes.
As a German, we are usually only passengers in this competition. So I'm really happy that this time we are in the middle of attention. And it's only the city we are living in. But we all will have a great time. We are looking forward to it, to welcome all the people from all over the world, at least Europe, to have a great time here in Liverpool. If there's a city in the world where you can have a proper party with no reason, it's Liverpool. And we have a good reason, because so many great singers are here. It's all about enjoying your time and having the best time you can. So on behalf of all of us, very welcome to Liverpool.
Oh, thanks.
And have the best time.
Oh, thanks. Is that nice? That's sort of a personal message of sorts from Jurgen Klopp, welcoming us to Liverpool, the home of this year's Eurovision Song Contest. We do this every Monday. We'll keep it going for a while. It's what we watched over the weekend. Just while it's fresh in our memory, that we might recommend these to you. And you may say, oh yeah, I hadn't heard about that, or that's a good recommendation. Or you like the fact that Grace recommended something last week and you enjoyed that, so you're thinking, I might be like Grace. So these are the things that the team recommend. from the weekend's viewing. Thank you. Emily P is a horror fan. She went to see The Pope's Exorcist, starring Russell Crowe. If you're brave enough to watch it, make sure to look out for all the Irish locations. The film was shot in Wicklow and Dublin, Trinity College in particular. And if you look closely, you'll see that Russell's motorbike in the film even has a small Guinness sticker on it. Well spotted, Emily P, for the horror fans out there. Niamh, she's a fan of Ken. She watched the finale last night, a roller coaster from start to finish. Which shocker of a last scene. Roll on series 3, says our Niamh. Grace has been watching Still Game on Netflix. I'm interested to see this. It's a surreal Scottish comedy that follows the antics of two pensioners, Jack and Victor, as they live out their latter years in a tower block in Glasgow. It's gas and mad and kind of sad. And you should probably watch with subtitles, as the Glasgow accent and slang is strong. And you don't want to miss a word these mad lads utter. So that's Still Game on Netflix. That's on my list of things to watch. Gilly began watching A Small Light last night on Disney Plus. Tells the story of me. I should have read that beforehand. I'll get back to that. And Neil has watched the rehearsal videos of Eurovision Semi-Final 1. That's what he's been doing his research. And we at home watched the Ed Sheeran documentary, which is very honest, heartwarming. It's split into four. We've watched the first two. The first two are love, and he talks about the love between him and his wife Cherry, which is very authentic and real. They know each other since they were at school. It's lovely. And then Loss is the second one, where he lost his sort of soulmate Jamal, who was very instrumental in getting Ed Sheeran and his work out to a larger audience. So that's what we're watching. So there are the things we watched over the weekend. 5 on 551 Ray at RTE.ie. Speaking of t-shirts, I'll be wearing my Go Mickey Joe t-shirt for the rest of the week. I think we'll get out of the semi-finals and then Queen Loreen or Finland for the win, says Lauren Cork. Great. Well, that'll be a win for us. If we get out of the semi-final tomorrow evening, Laura, that's a win. I think that's a win. There's the thing now. Stephen Teep has been on. 5 years ago today, I did my first radio interview with Ray Darcy, just after I went public about losing Irene to the cervical check debacle. I still remember the nervous wreck I was driving to Dublin that day. So much water under the bridge since then. That's 5 years ago. Wow. And of course, as a result of that, Stephen became very friendly with the late Vicky Whelan. I know Vicky Phelan. And I was just talking about Vicky this morning and how much I miss her. And it's you know, so much, as he says, so much water under the bridge. I found the whole ceremony disconcerting, says somebody on the coronation. They're saying it's the last one. It's the last time we'll see such pomp and ceremony from the royal family in the UK, that the next time it'll be a pared-down thing. And it'll be within the next, 20 or 30 years, won't it? Yeah, because he's in his 70s. 5 on 551 Ray at RTE.ie. We'll do that there. And we'll play this because the Eurovision is in England. And the reason it's in England is because of this man, Sam Ryder. Spaceman! Sam Ryder, Spaceman! The reason we're in Liverpool tomorrow. 5 on 551 Ray at RTE.ie. Still Game, as recommended by Your Grace, is a classic BBC Scotland comedy. If you want to see really well-written comedy combined with genuine and empathetic character development, then this ranks amongst the best TV comedies ever written. Wow, high praise. It's simply magnificent, says Patrick. If he's given out the stars to be 5, maybe 6 out of 5. Thanks for that, Patrick. 5 on 551. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our whodunit quiz. Yep, 2 quizzers, 3 whodunit questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions, comedy, anything that involves human endeavour. Like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2. If you go with a clue, it's easier. You get 1 for a correct answer. And this week, we have a weekend break away in one of the iNua Collection's gorgeous 4-star hotels. Enjoy your city stay at Dublin Kickback in Kilkenny's Chic, the Dublin One, Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny. Check out the new spa at the Tullamore Court Hotel. Relax in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan or the Fairways Dundalk or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There's something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the iNua Collection. The choice is yours. iNua.ie. Here's your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. Tomorrow we'll be coming live from the 2023 Eurovision Song Contest. But where's the event taking place? Is it Leeds or Liverpool? Leeds or Liverpool for the Eurovision, 0818 715 925, 0818 715 925. And good luck with that. We could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, lovely to be joined in studio on this Monday afternoon by author and podcaster Sophie White. Her new novel is My Hot Friend, and it's out now. Good afternoon, Sophie.
Hello, how are you?
Good, good. Book number 7, I was saying.
Yeah, that's right.
So 2 non-fiction and 5 novels.
That's right,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, right.
I barely can keep track.
Is that in 7 years? 7 books in 7 years?
It is, yeah. Although there was a couple of years where I didn't. So my first book came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And then I had a bit of a gap. And then my next book came out in 2019. So I guess it's 6 books in 4 years.
Right.
So,
and you're writing all the time. People recognise your work from the Sunday Independent.
Yes, I write every week there in the Life magazine. Yes. I write a column called Nobody Tells You, which I love doing. Absolutely love doing it. It's great having a deadline every week, actually, when you're writing books, because that's such a big project. But
it's like training, is it? It's like doing short runs and then you have to do the marathon for the book.
I was about to say, I was like, you're chatting to Ray, bring in running.
No, you don't have to bring in running.
He'll get it. Yeah, it is. It's like a marathon. Yeah, totally. never done a marathon.
This is your longest run then. Let's keep the analogy going for a moment. Because this comes in at what, 450 or 489 pages?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It is like, yeah, girth-wise, my biggest book.
I think
value for money.
Yes. So it's about friendship, female friendship.
Which is
a hot topic. I don't like using that term, but because we had Elizabeth Day in recently, and every time I open up one of the Sunday magazines, there's an article about it. You wrote an article yesterday about it.
I did. And like the New York Times had a piece about it a couple of weeks ago. The Cut. Obviously, Elizabeth Day's Friendaholic is a non-fiction book that's just come out.
Yeah.
And like, it's really weird because it's hard to plan. You know, if you're writing a book, you're writing it a year or more in advance. It's hard to know what like the cultural conversation is going to be. But like, I just kept thinking there really isn't enough stories that really center friendship.
Yes.
You know, and like, I suppose the inspiration for My Hot Friend began like quite a few years ago when I was writing an article about friendship breakups, and I put it out on my Instagram. Has anyone had a friendship breakup? Would you like to talk to me anonymously for this article? And I've never had a response like it to any topic. Like the amount of women mainly like got in touch and they said they'd broken up with friends. It had been more painful than any romantic breakups they'd ever had, that they had been, you know, they'd cried, they'd, and you know, I just thought, oh my God, there's really something in this.
Mm.
And like, so, you know, with my commercial fiction, I'm always like seeking to entertain, you know, I want to write romps basically and like fun and comedy, but I always have darker themes because that's life. Like,
yes.
And I was very interested in centering friendship.
So the reason you did that article in the first place was because you had split up with a friend, a very good friend of yours. Now it all came right in the end. It was a happy ever after.
Yeah. I did have one row with a friend that like really undid me. And it was quite short. But like I can go like fairly histrionic fast, not to 90. But the thing as well that really struck me when I was having this like kind of friendship breakup, or like we were on a break, like Ross and Rachel. I was so upset. Like I was more upset than any fight I'd ever had with my husband. And I was kind of like analysing it and being like, why is it so disturbing? And then I was like, well, I've been with her way longer than I've been with my husband.
Yes.
I've been with her 30 years, you know? And I'm like, not that I'd be like putting my husband out with the bins, but...
There are conversations you probably can't... I know, not probably. There are conversations you can't have. Most women can't have with their husbands. That they can only have with their best friends. Is that fair enough to say?
I mean, it's the conversations about the husbands, I guess. You're bringing to your best friends. There's just something in it. Like, we're just so closely knit into our friendships and our friends. And, like, I know, like, among my friends, we're, like, nonstop talking about, like, when we get old together and we've, you know, finally jettisoned the romantic partners and we're, like, going to move into a commune together. Or
it's interesting
make sure
that. Are they going to die or what? How are you going to jettison them?
We're either going to outlive them or we're going to put them in kind of a storage, yeah, humane storage.
Right. And you'll go off and you'll have a commune yourselves.
A commune, or okay, maybe we'll like try and aim for the same high-end nursing home.
Right.
But it's definitely like, it's definitely things me and my friends have talked about. It's like, really? When can we finally live together?
Like, you know, the stats are there. Women outlive men. That's, you know, the life expectancy for women is older than...
We're just laying the groundwork. But like,
I'm intrigued because it's something I haven't experienced, obviously, because I'm a man. No, but I haven't like, I've experienced friendship, but I haven't experienced a woman, a friendship between two women, because I'm a man. I can't. I can only witness from the outside. So I'm intrigued by it. I'm intrigued by it as to how it's different.
Yeah.
And again, you don't know how it's different because you've never experienced male, you know, bromances. So you don't know. But I think from looking in on it, you know, I'm obviously married. I have five sisters. I've worked with a lot of women over the years. Looking in on it, that there is, it's stronger than male friendships in many ways.
Yeah, well, I don't want to generalize, but yeah, for sure, it seems that way to me. But I think as well, the things that, like, I think when it comes to friendships, I think it's really, like, my hot friend, what I'm hearing from readers is that, like, it's really, they're relating massively.
Okay, you well, know let's what talk I mean? A little
it
bit
relates
about it,
to their lives.
Yes.
And I think the things that, like, kind of, you know, the female friendships got a bit of a reputation, like a bad reputation, for being kind of toxic, which I hate. And I absolutely, like, totally reject that characterization. I think female friendship is like really, like, there is strong bonds, and there is, when a betrayal occurs, it's like a deep hurt, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But I feel as well, like, we're at a kind of an interesting juncture, because I think we have like all the dynamics of school, you know, they're actually kind of following us into adulthood.
Why is that?
And I think it's because a lot of like, us are on social media now, and we had this opportunity to kind of like sort of see our friends like living their lives, and it can lead to kind of hurt feelings, or feeling like, I feel left out sometimes. I'm 38, you know what I mean? And I think like I see it in my mum's generation, like it's still the same kinds of like friendship dynamics.
But there can be very obvious exclusion with social media, can't there? And you touch on it here, you know, one of the characters, not to give too much away, but Claire.
Yeah.
Like, she feels excluded.
Totally. Yes. And that's the other thing. Like, some of us have these kind of legacy friendships where, like, you might have lived on the same estate when you're kids, and then you kind of, you stay in this friendship group and you have a kind of a WhatsApp chat, and but you're all in different lives now.
You move on.
You often don't have a lot in common anymore. And it's kind of, that's kind of the situation Claire finds herself in. And it's all kind of brought to a head because one of the girls in the group chat is getting married.
Yes,
and, like, there's nothing like a wedding to really, like,
The politics of weddings, just mad stuff, isn't
it? Absolutely, absolutely. And then, like, I think the way we all kind of communicate now is the group chat massively on WhatsApp. And we all know, you know, the terrifying scenario when a group chat goes suddenly very quiet,
right,
and you start to think, is there a side chat going on?
Right.
Or we've all
been a subgroup,
a breakaway faction. Like, we've all either been in the breakaway faction or we've become suspicious.
I'm intrigued. How does that start? Who broaches it? Like, because you can't obviously say it on the WhatsApp here. We're forming a subgroup here. So it has to be when you're out for drinks or something, is it? Let's extricate X or Y from the group and let's form our own group.
You cannot make me admit to participating in this on live radio.
But
it's probably something like that.
I suppose you could feign it that it's some activity that maybe this person isn't involved in. It could be.
Yeah, it happens.
It could be a book club. It could be something.
It happens.
Right, okay.
You know, and like the terror of the side group is very real, I think.
But without giving too much away, it can be serious for people, you know, because we know, and it's well documented, that some people, the measure of their worth is there in ticks and likes and correspondence on social media.
Sure, yeah.
And if that isn't delivered, then it's damaging to their self-worth, and that can damage their mental health, and that happens. I'm not going to give away too much here, but it does, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think the three characters in My Hot Friend, and I suppose, like, the reason it's such a big book is because there's three very kind of full stories in it.
And they all have their group of friends, yes.
Yeah, and they, like, Lexi, Claire and Joanne are all the kind of main characters, and they don't know each other at the beginning beginning of the book, but they eventually, through each of their kind of own circumstances, find themselves in their 30s in need of a new best friend, essentially. And like, for very different reasons. So as you said, Claire is feeling left out of, you know, her school friends. You know, she feels like they moved on. She also wasn't picked to be a bridesmaid in the wedding party. And
I felt that was like a kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's been given the wedding favours to make. That's her like contribution. And then Joanne is the first of her friends to have a baby. And like, so she's in her late 20s. She's kind of stumbled into motherhood. And there's just this chasm between her and all her mates, who just have no idea like what her new life is. And understandably. And then there's Lexi, who is kind of co-host of this like absolutely like hit podcast with her best friend. So they have this kind of weird thing that's evolved, which is that their friendship has become like a commodity. They earn their living from it. They perform their friendship to thousands of listeners. And, you know, like it like goes belly up and like what, you know, what is Lexi left with?
Yeah,
like I suppose she's kind of grappling with like the decisions that she's made in terms of like being a celebrity bestie and like how kind of maybe shallow that really ended up being.
Yes,
you know,
because she's obsessed with relatability to the point where she can't say she's buying a new house because that wouldn't work well with her listeners because they think that she's one of them.
Yeah,
and that is the thing about, and I'd say a lot of people who listen to, say for example, Vogue and Joanne, they feel like they know them.
I know. I think they're my best friends.
Oh, do you? Right.
Oh, you're, I do. Yeah. Are they not my best friends? I listen every week. That's the thing I found with writing the Lexi Amanda podcast storyline was, like, obviously I do podcasts myself, but I am an avid listener to podcasts. And all the podcasts I love the most are like duos, girl duos who are best friends. And like, I cannot believe that like they are not my closest friends.
Is it, the reason
it's
for
called parasocial,
parasocial
this relationship. Yeah,
right.
That's like kind of, it grows on the internet. It's one-sided. You are deeply invested in someone's life. They don't know you exist. You know, it's not necessarily
always
unhealthy.
It's realer than, say, you know, film stars or TV stars, because the people on the podcast are sharing a lot more about
their
lives.
Yeah. And it's a way more intimate medium.
Yes, yes.
You know,
because
they're
just having
ears.
The chats.
Totally.
Yeah, they're in your ears. You're eavesdropping. You feel you're there.
Mm.
You're probably even, you know, when you're out in your walk or wherever you listen to, you might even throw in a little bit, you know, you might talk back to them. Oh, no, I'd never do that or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, and what do you call it?
Parasocial.
Parasocial. This
is
a phenomenon,
is
it?
Yeah. So I researched it a fair bit for the book because obviously Lexi and Amanda have like these legions of fans. Like they're really successful. Like they're nothing like my, not that my podcasts are unsuccessful, but like I'm not
You're
being,
talking Vogue and Joanne territory, millions.
I'm not being offered six-figure deals, which Lexi and Amanda are in the book. They were kind of based on like an American podcast that had a very public acrimonious split. And it like, it's so interesting to observe something like that because it like divides the listeners. It's practically, you know, Team Lexi, Team Amanda in the book and stuff like that. And like, it's just, I found it like a really interesting kind of like terrain to mine for fiction and comedy.
This, I suppose, speaking of mining, this is the book, I haven't read all your other ones, but you seem to mine a lot of your own personal experience in this book.
Yeah.
Like one of the characters ends up in psychiatric care.
That's true, yeah.
And you've been in psychiatric care.
Snap, yeah,
yes.
That's me.
And you write, you know, you write very well, obviously, because it's first-hand experience.
Yeah.
And did you find that difficult?
I did find it difficult because, so Claire has the same illness as me, which is bipolar. And I found it very hard to like really kind of sit down and think, how am I going to like show people what like a manic episode is, for example, like in an authentic way, but also like, you know, there's a lot of responsibility when it comes to writing about those kind of issues. And like I use the Samaritans website actually a lot for kind of guidelines on how to kind of write about those
kind
of issues.
And you give their number and you write a letter at the end of the book to your readers.
I do, because I think what Claire experiences in the book is, you know, unfortunately really common, but also I wanted to normalize it. Like it was definitely, you know, why I wanted to set part of the book on a psychiatric ward, because, you know, I've been there and I know that it's a normal normal thing, you know, and it shouldn't be shrouded in any shame, or like it shouldn't be hidden, you know. The more normal we can sort of treat it, the better. Mm. It's like a hospital stay, and you might need it at certain points in your life, and then you might be well again. Mm. But yeah, like her experience is very close to my experience, but I still kind of found it challenging to like, how am I going to bring a reader on this journey with Claire and for them to understand what she's going through? Because like a lot of mental illness is really hard to relate to, because, you know, like Claire sort of says in the book, like she has the mads.
Yeah.
And I very much have the mads myself. Yes. And sometimes when I'm describing like some of the more off the wall, scarier symptoms, like, for example, kind of delusional thinking, you know, I once became kind of convinced that I was possessed, and that was what was wrong with me.
Right.
And like trying to explain that to somebody who's never experienced anything like that kind of, you know, full mental takeover.
So is that voices in...
No, it was more just this like real strong conviction.
Right.
It luckily passed very quickly, and I had kind of enough rational kind of thought left to be like, it's not great that I'm thinking I might be possessed, must get to the doctor.
Right,
and I did, and it was great, and I received amazing care.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you see, when you describe something like that to, you know, another person who's never experienced it, it definitely kind of comes off pretty weird. And so I wanted to show some of that side of mental illness in My Hot Friend with Claire, but in a way that people could access and understand. Mm. And so, you know.
And they can rest assured that it's very close to the truth, because you've been there.
It's a funny one, because I can't speak for like all people that have bipolar.
No, but you can speak for yourself.
Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that's the thing, when you're like writing about mental illness, and I've written about it loads in my nonfiction work as well, you know, I do feel like a sense of responsibility.
And we've spoken about it before.
My first book was about a nervous breakdown.
Yes, yeah.
And you very kindly had me on your TV show back in 2016 when I was about to drop a baby any minute. So,
yes,
you know,
you've three
children. Ran the gauntlet of letting me sit on your couch. I have three kids now. So my oldest is 9, I have 6, and I have a 3-year-old.
So that was your second.
That was the middle one.
And how are you? I suppose that's a loaded question.
It is. I mean, depends on the day. I'm good. Obviously, it's just post-publish week, so it's always really like high intensity bringing a new book out, and like obviously it's tough. It's very vulnerable, you know.
Yes, but I'm wondering, like, you know, because we hear an awful lot about triggers now. And over the years, have you, you know, not got used to it, but have you learned more about yourself and your bipolar condition that you know what's happening?
Oh,
you can sort of predict.
Yeah, I'm getting better and better at recognizing the signs. I'm getting better and better at like taking care of myself when I'm well.
Yes.
So that when I'm unwell, I have kind of like resources, I guess. And like I have spotters, not like the gym.
But friends. Who...
like a mental illness gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's not a bad idea. You're onto something there,
that's
I think.
It. Yeah, yeah. I have friends and I have my husband who are all like really good at kind of seeing on the horizon, maybe.
You're okay with them pointing it out to you?
Sometimes it can be quite hard to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if I am kind of like tipping into a bad kind of episode. I can be very hard to reason with, I'm told. But I'm getting better at, better and better at like recognizing it, taking care of it. And for sure.
Do people understand bipolar? Do you reckon? Now, apart from what you've just said there about Claire and writing about it, but do they actually describe understand how it affects people in that the two opposite poles, you know, manic and depressed?
Like, I think people do. I mean, I do think that we're all becoming so much more literate in, you know, mental illness and talking about it and stuff like that. I think that, like, a lot of people have people in their lives with these kind of illnesses, you know.
And how does it affect your writing? I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah, like it doesn't. I don't know if it really.
So, for example, could you?
Much.
You know, would you know what sort of? You know, can you only write when you're well, or do you write when you're not well? And if you do that, can you recognise that when you read it back? There you go. Sorry, that's sort of a convoluted question. But you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I do know what you're getting at. It's definitely hard to quantify because I think every time you write a book, no matter how many books you've already written, this is your first time writing this book.
Yes.
So it's kind of fascinating because you just come to every book with this kind of new sort of set of problems and fun, but also angst and, you know, and like you have to kind of like maintain this belief in the story and belief in yourself that you can do it and you can tell the story. And like, definitely, I find like writing is such this like it's such a process of kind of just like a leap of faith the whole way and just trying to sustain belief. And that's when like an amazing editor like my editor, Ciara Dorley at Hachette, and my agents, like that's when the people you collaborate with right. come in
yes.
and say,
so this was longer. No, but I really like what I've read of it. I really enjoyed the characters, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad.
So
I'm really
Lexi
glad.
And Amanda, they host the My Hot Friend podcast. Yes.
Yeah.
And then Joanne.
And it's a very controversial podcast.
Yes, yes.
They're called the kind of Joe Rogans of Ireland in the book. And so that gives you some sense of the kind of stuff that they're saying on mic and facing backlash for.
Final
question. Then Joanne is pretty funny, I think. I have to admit, I did name Joanne after Joanne McNally. Yeah.
Although she's not doing a podcast. She's the one who's just had a baby. Yes, yeah.
And like Joanne McNally is just so hilarious and I'm such a fan that I just was like, when the character for Joanne came to me and she is like a real kind of, she does bring levity to the story.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to call her Joanne after Joanne McNally. But like it's...
She celebrated her 40th birthday over the weekend.
Did she? Yeah. Oh my God.
My
Isn't
wife
she
told
amazing?
Me. Amazing, yeah.
And like she's her
what
stamina,
a success story.
Like for her, her performing live. Like I did two live shows back to back last week, and I'm like
You're still
Bruce
recovering.
Springsteen. I was destroyed, and I was like, for future, like going forward, I'm going to do like Bruce, and I'm taking a night off between each.
Okay.
But
so the three main characters: Claire, Joanne, and Lexi.
Yeah.
And is there bits of you in all of them, or is one of them more like Sophie White?
Oh, there are definitely bits of me in all of them. And then bits of all the people whose personalities and lives I steal when I'm writing fiction. I'm
magpie. Yes,
absolutely. Very dangerous to say anything to me. Tell me any anecdotes. Oh, it's terrible. But like My Hot Friend, as much as we've talked about like some of the darker themes in it, like it is your holiday
read.
Oh,
no, it is. And you want to know what happens, you know. And,
yeah, I hope so.
You can tell from the first few chapters that these are people who don't know each other, but they're going to end up knowing each other. And you're intrigued to find out how that happens.
Exactly, because they couldn't be more different.
Yes, yeah. Sophie, great to see you. My Hot Friend is in bookshops now. You'll recognise it. What's the official green? Is that a
lime?
Lime green.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, lime
I
green.
I love a neon.
With hot pink.
Hot pink.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
and that's Amanda on the cover.
Yes. Yeah.
The Hot Friend.
Thanks, Sophie. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Oh, well, interesting chat to hear on the radio. I was never chosen to be a bridesmaid, godmother, etc. Not invited to weddings either. I come from a tiny family unit. I've always hated how some women take for granted being in the midst of all these occasions of life. It can be quite lonely being excluded. Yeah, well, that's one of the themes covered in the book. And on the coronation, considering the coronation cost over £100 million, the highlight for me was seeing Prince Harry walk tall and proud through the Abbey. If Charles can't or won't mend bridges with his son, how can he make a good ruler? Mary in Leash. Good point, Mary. Conor Pope joins us in studio. Did you watch any of it over the weekend?
I did not, but £100 million.
Over,
wow.
Yeah, that's what they reckon.
That's a lot of cash.
Well, that would include the concert as well last night, which was a huge production.
It was not my thing really at all.
Yeah.
No judgment on anybody who did watch it, but it's just not my thing.
Yeah, I was passing through for the coronation, and then I'm a music fan, so I watched the concert last night. Now, you're writing today about electric cars, and in particular the cost of batteries.
Yeah.
For a Nissan Leaf.
Well, actually, it was inspired by that because a letter writer to the Irish Times contacted us a couple of weeks back, and he had bought a Nissan Leaf, and it was his first new car, and he bought a Nissan Leaf, I think, 7 years ago, and the battery was depleting, so he went back into Nissan, and they told him that it would cost €19,000 to replace the battery.
Just say that again for me.
€19,000 for a battery. Now, that's a huge amount of money. Now, to be clear, so he wrote a letter to the Irish Times. A lot of people responded to that letter on the letters pages. So I kind of figured, well, you know what, I'm going to contact the man, talk to him, get a bit more of his backstory, find out what happened, what he plans to do with it, and then talk to some other people about the pros and cons of driving an electric vehicle. Because the reality is we're all going to be driving electric vehicles at some point. And they are, you know, they're not perfect from an environmental perspective. And as a lot of people say, is that the most environmentally friendly car that you can have is the one that's in your driveway already, because that isn't going to do any more environmental destruction, you know. But like if you're getting a new car and you buy an electric car, people would have been frightened to realise that that could potentially happen. So, like, I suppose there's a few elements to it. First off, the Nissan Leaf in particular wouldn't have had the longest battery life. I mean, a lot of the cars that have come on the road since then,
the technology has developed,
have much longer battery life. So that might have had 150, 170, 180. So the battery had depleted by around 25%, which means that they could only really cover 100 kilometres without you know,
recharging
it. And 100 kilometres is fine if you live in Dublin 7 and you're just going in and out to Dublin 2 or whatever it might be. But if you're living in Kildare or Carlow and you need to get to Dublin regularly or you need to get wherever you need to get to, it's not really going to get you that far.
No.
So then the questions are, what do you do? Is that likely to happen to other people? And the reality is that, as I say, the technology has improved. Batteries have improved.
Have they got cheaper?
Well, actually, no. The thing is, they're in such high demand, and it's a basic laws of supply and demand. So electric cars are now, you know, they range anywhere from €25,000 up to €60,000, €70,000, €80,000 for, you know, the top of the range cars. And then you have your fancy Teslas, which are costing around €45,000-€50,000, and they're the ones that have probably the longest range, or up there with the longest range, because they can do 500-600 kilometres. So we're kind of getting to that space, and I think we do need to deal with the batteries, we need to deal with range, we also need to deal with the infrastructure. So I talked to this chap and I talked to the AA, and then I had, there's a Q&A asking some fairly standard questions about electric vehicles and where we might be going with them.
So cost of battery, is that coming down? Is that going to be a thing for people?
To be honest, probably not.
Not, okay.
Because if you were to buy a car now, the range of the car might be 300 or 400 kilometres. So if, as in the case of our reader, if the battery was depleted by 25%, you'd still have, if it was 400, you'd still have a 300 kilometre range.
But then if the resale of it, so you're not going to buy a second-hand car, knowing that its battery has depleted down to 20 or 30%.
No, it's depleted by 20 or 30.
Okay. So that's
an important thing.
Yes.
But I think a couple of things will happen. The batteries will probably retain their value more than the cars in many respects. There's a company that's set up in the United States by former Tesla executives, and they're repurposing car batteries for use in other things.
Right.
And it's a hugely successful enterprise. They just can't get enough batteries to turn the business into this global thing. So the batteries, a lot of people, like one person who wrote to the Irish Times suggested that you'd use the battery, it would fade away and you'd bin it. Like, the batteries do have a substantial life beyond the car.
Right.
So I think that the batteries that are being made now are much better than the batteries that were being made seven years ago. So when I was speaking to the AAA, the reality is the second-hand market hasn't matured enough for us to know what it's going to be like in 6 years or 7 years or 8 years. But the cars that are being made today are way better than the cars that were being made 7 years ago across the board. And that's not to have a pop at Nissan. It's just a reality of the world. The technology is improving.
But it's interesting. That's a thing that we wouldn't have had to consider buying a second-hand petrol or diesel.
Yeah, but there's other elements to that. And even our reader, when I was speaking to him, like, there are the environmental implications.
Yes, of course. Yes,
for 7 years, he's been driving an electric car, which A, was costing him virtually nothing because he's charging it at home. B, there's no wear and tear on it because the cost of
No, I take all of that on board.
And see, there's no emissions.
I know, but just try and sell that to me, Conor. Here's a car, you're buying a new car, it's costing you whatever, 30 grand, but in a number of years' time, you will have to buy a battery for 19 grand. Like, I'm not interested. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not a used car salesman. So.
Right. So then, anyway, it's all there in the Irish Times today, and you can go online and read that if you like. Okay. Pricewatch at RTE.ie. I was in Tesco recently and noticed Dove deodorant had a price of €9. But if I had a club card, it would have only cost me €4.50. That's half, if you do the maths. Surely this is discrimination against people who don't sign up to its loyalty scheme. And how can there be such a big difference between the full price and the discounted one? It's half.
It is half. And this listener contacted us, but I've had other people contact me about this very issue. And indeed, I noticed it myself because, you know, you're pushing your shopping trolley up and down the aisles of Tesco's and you see this full price deodorant for €9 and then club card price €4.50. You're thinking €9 is a lot of money to spend on deodorant. And one of the things that confused me about it, and I've never had the satisfactory answer to this, is it's a 48 hour deodorant.
All right.
But like, would you not wash it off in the shower after the first 24 hours? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So there is this huge move by Tesco to phase out. And it's been happening since the start of the cost of living crisis, really, to kind of phase out a lot of the special offers that would have been widely available to all shoppers and to target them directly at club card shoppers. Right. And the club card is obviously the Tesco loyalty scheme. And I can totally see where they're coming from because A, they want more people to join their club card. B, they can't have the same level of special offers as they had pre-cost of living crisis because they're trying to make, you know, they're trying to make ends meet, for want of a better phrase. And they're trying to, you know, so they're cutting back on a lot of the special offers. But they want to create the impression as you walk up and down the aisle that there's loads of special offers. So by making certain products club card prices, A, you get more people to join your club card or to use the club card so you collect more data on them. B, you have more bargain, promotional, just a bit of a sidebar,
by collecting the data on your customers, what way do you use that data?
Well, it depends on the retailer and you can use it in all sorts of ways. I mean, you can target, you know, I mean, you can say, okay, well, X, you know, these retailers are buying X product, Y product and Z product. So maybe I could get them to buy product A and B as well. So I'm going to target them with coupons or vouchers in their next circular. The other thing is you can just, you know, as a data mining exercise, you know what products are popular, you know when people are buying them, you know kind of the age profile of the people buying products and all sorts of different things.
Yeah,
so
okay,
you
yeah.
use that data for whatever means. And like I've told you before about all sorts of dark stories about people using it for nefarious reasons, not Tesco, but other companies, particularly in the United States. So anyway, that's the thinking behind the club card or the loyalty card schemes. So then there's the whole thing about the price discrepancies and, you know, €9 versus €4.50. So I contacted Tesco and I just asked them, like, lads, like we've talked to myself and Tesco and Aldi and Lidl. I have a lot of over and backs with them about prices across the board, butter, milk, whatever it might be. But I just said, like, how can this product be so... Well, I sent them the mail and said, what can you say? So they got back to me this afternoon. They said, all retailers operate different promotional cycles. In this case, we are offering this promotion for club card holders, which means they can purchase this product for €4.50. Club card prices are our way of giving our loyal customers great value and exclusive deals in our larger stores and online. And then the product referred to is a branded 200 milliliter can and is a higher efficacy product. And it's important to note that we also stock many other branded deodorant products, which range in size and price from €2.20, €2, €3 and €4. And that is indeed all true. But it doesn't really explain the massive price differential. So then just for divilment, I went off and I priced the same product in other shops.
Right.
And I couldn't find it selling for €9 anywhere. Like I found it in some big pharmaceutical chains where it was selling for €8, which is still dear.
Yes.
But it's not €9. Okay. And then I found a lot of other, you know, similar products by the same company that, again, offer the same length of time protection. I'm not necessarily saying they're identical products for selling for €6, €6.50. So it could be. A cynic might suggest.
Yes, go on.
That you price.
Be cynical for a moment.
You price a product at a certain high level to make the promotional price
look
seem
attractive.
More attractive.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that they're doing that, but I'm saying that would certainly be one reason why you might consider that. Because I don't think there'd be many people who would buy a product, any kind of deodorant, for €9. Because it seems like a lot to
pay.
But
as you say it there, it sounds to me that if I don't have a club card and I buy a 200 milliliter can of deodorant, 48 hour, whatever, that I'm subsidising the people who do have club cards.
Absolutely. And I think, and a lot of people, and it's not just with this product, there's a lot of products that are on discount, you know, for club card holders, and a lot of people aren't club card holders. So the ones who aren't club card holders are paying the higher price.
Yeah.
And that is a way that Tesco are subsidising the lower prices.
If everybody had a club card.
Yeah. Well, then there would be no promotional incentive to offering it at the discount, and they would probably a retailer like Tesco would offer it at a slightly different price. I'm guessing, but I think the reality is that it's part of the cost of living crisis piece in that they want to continue offering promotional deals. They're not going to offer them to everybody. So offer them to people who are the loyal customers,
Okay. I lived in California and that club card 50% discount was in all grocery stores. Hate seeing it here too now. By the way, that 48-hour deodorant is amazing for perimenopause sweating.
There you go.
And you can get branded deodorant for $2.99 in the discount stores. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad I know why it's like, and I wasn't slagging off the product. I'm sure it's a very good product.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Thanks very much, Connor. Talk to you next week.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga Coit, thank you very much. We have two quizzers standing by to play our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two quizzes standing by, three questions each and a prize. And it's a weekend away in any one of the I Knew It Collection gorgeous four-star hotels. The One in Dublin, the Hibernian in Kilkenny, the Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways in Dundalk, or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Inua.ie, that's Inua.ie, Inua.ie. Catherine Bannon in Dunshaughlin, good afternoon, how are you?
Hello, Ray. I'm great, thank you.
Good. How was your weekend?
My weekend was fairly quiet. Right. Wasn't too hectic. My husband had a very interesting weekend.
What did he do?
He got to Bruce Springsteen Friday night and Sunday night.
Right. Look at him. And you weren't invited or didn't want to go?
No, it's just they only had standing seats and I'm just not feeling comfortable standing.
Okay, right, okay.
So
standing seats. So he's obviously a fan. I see the way I work that out.
Yes, huge fan.
Has he seen him before? And how often has he seen him before?
He's seen him quite a number of times. He even flew to New York to see him once.
Right. And were they different, did he say? Or have you spoken to him yet today about the two?
Yeah, he's actually telling me now he's actually just arrived here. Now, he's seen him 40 times.
40?
Yeah.
Wow. What's his name?
Declan Bannon.
How are you doing, Declan? And we just asked him there.
He's saying hello to you.
ask him there, were they very similar or did they differ a lot Friday versus
Sunday?
Were they
similar or did they differ a lot, he wants to know.
The shows?
Yeah.
Quite similar, but I thought last night was better than Friday.
Okay.
You heard that.
I heard that, yeah. So he tells you, and then I'll tell them, because, Declan said that he thought Sunday was better than Friday night there, and he's seen them 40 times. Thanks, Declan, thanks.
There you go.
Yeah, he still has his voice. He wasn't singing along too much, yeah. So you had a quiet weekend, and you probably liked that, did you, or not?
Oh, it's fine, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You're up against Bridget Daly, who's in Templemore in County Tipp. How are you doing, Bridget?
I'm not too bad at all, Ray. Thanks very much.
You're doing the shopping, tidying the house. So you're busy.
Yeah, I'm not busy. I'm just going to have the dinner this evening and take it easy. I don't get rushed over anything.
Oh, nice way to be. And what's on the menu for the dinner?
Lovely bacon and cabbage. Nothing fancy at all.
No, I know, but
just
memories of my granny, Granny Bonner. That's the second mentioned today because she used to call it pig's bum, cabbage and potatoes. That's all right. Back in the day.
I know, just go for it. We'll call it a little bit of bacon here.
Okay. Would you make a white sauce with that, a parsley sauce? No.
I probably won't. I'll just stay with it.
Yes. How was your weekend, Bridget?
It was very good. I was at my nephew had a first communion over the weekend.
Great.
So, of course, I turned up at that and we had a lovely day.
Great.
And then watching the Tipperary match on Saturday evening. And,
Right. How did they get on?
Well, it was a draw.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was a draw. Yes. What about the Eurovision?
Well, now, it was like I said to the lassie there on the phone that I'm passive about it, but my daughter is passionate.
Ah, nice. So you're passive, she's passionate.
What's
your daughter's name?
Elizabeth.
So she'll be interested to know that we have Niamh Kavanagh and Brian Kennedy on in about 10 minutes' time.
She'll be delighted.
Yeah, to preview
that.
It. Yeah, so you know yeah, Niamh won, yeah, obviously, and then Brian.
Yeah, of course.
Did really well. Yes, yeah. So will she watch everything that's on, the first semi-final tomorrow night, then the second semi-final on Thursday night, then the grand final on Saturday?
Oh, absolutely. And at my niece's house, they're having a Eurovision party.
Brilliant.
So
It's a great bit of diversion.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
So it's Catherine in Dunshockland versus Bridget in Templemore. Good luck to you both. Now, you know, three questions each. I give you the category and then I ask you if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. However, if it's drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Catherine.
Thank you.
That's Bridget there. Catherine, the first category is country music stars. Country music stars. Now, do you want a clue?
No clue.
Okay, so for two, which country music star is this?
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, burns, burns.
Johnny Cash.
It is Johnny Cash. Yes, the brilliant ring of fire. The only time I ever sang in public was I sang that at my friend's wedding. I hope there's no video evidence. Yeah, I know. Oh, God is right. Oh, God is right, Catherine. Yeah, that's the perfect response to that. Now, Bridget, country music stars, what do you want to do?
Oh, I'll go for two.
Go for two. Okay, so for 2 points, which country music star is this?
Don't tell my heart, my achy, breaky heart. Just don't think you'd understand. And if you tell my heart, my achy, breaky heart, he might blow up and kill his man.
Oh, yeah.
Who's that?
Billy Ray Cyrus.
It is. Yeah, Miley's dad. 2 points for you, Billy Ray Cyrus, achy, breaky heart. Good stuff. Now, it's a nice one today. Thank you. It's a nice one today because there's a good bit of music in it. So, Catherine, the second category is music from the movies. Music from the movies. How do you feel about that?
Okay, no clue.
No clue. Okay, so for 2 points, who is this?
Let the sky fall when it crumbles. We will stand tall.
Adele?
Adele's the correct answer. Yes, it's Skyfall from 2012 from the James Bond franchise. She's currently doing a residency in Las Vegas and you get 2 points for that. Good stuff. Stop that. Right. Music from the movies. Bridget.
Go on, so.
She says, go on, so. For 2 points, who's singing this?
It's not worth fighting for. I can't help it. There's nothing I want more. You know it's true.
Oh, yeah. Brian Adams.
It is Brian Adams, yes. It was number one for 15 years, I think, back in the day. It was from Robin Hood, 1991. And you get, I think it was 16 weeks, actually. 16 weeks it was number one, but you get 2 points. So it's even. For all, it's down to the wire. And our final category is reality stars. Reality stars. So, Catherine, as I say, it's for all. If you go for a clue and get it right, you have 5 in the bag, but it means that Bridget can then go without a clue, and if she gets it right, she's today's winner. Of course, it's more difficult if you go without a clue, but the choice is yours.
I go no clue I have no clue about reality stars.
Hey, right. Okay, well, Declan's there in the background. He might help you out.
Yeah, he might.
So, reality stars, who is this for 2 points?
You know, you kind of worry about, are people still going to want to see what we have going on, because we've been doing this for 15 years now, which is a blessing, but also a little scary. Every single day there was this either drama,
is it Kim Kardashian,
or something crazy going on, or somebody has
They're in the right ballpark. In fact, they're in the right family, but it's it's Kris Jenner. She's the mother. Okay, now you're not out of it yet. But you don't get any points there. You're on 4. So too is Bridget, but she does have this question in hand. So reality stars, Bridget, if you get anything from this, you're today's winner.
Well, you know something, I'm going to go for a clue.
Yes, well, that's probably the wise thing to do, Bridget.
Yeah.
Listen carefully for this clue. This rock star's wife can often be found on a TV judging panel. So for 1 point and for victory in today's quiz, who is this?
The funniest thing for us was the way the show was received. It was basically an experiment. You know, the kids and I would go out somewhere and we'd look at a newsstand and all these front covers and it's us, you know, and you do nothing. We were doing nothing except being ourselves. and we were getting all of this attention.
Is that Sharon Osbourne?
It is Sharon Osbourne, yes. 1 point and victory. Yes, well yes, done, Bridget.
Well done, Bridget.
Thanks, Catherine, hard luck. Hard luck.
No worries.
We're going to send you out a Radar Show Keep Cup and lovely chatting to you. Mind yourself.
All right.
Thanks, see you, Catherine. Bye now. Bye. Bridget, well done.
Thanks very much, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah, you're happy out there. Yeah, you're off. The brilliant thing about this week's prize is you have a choice. So you can go to any one of the I Knew a Collection gorgeous four-star hotels that have them in Dublin, Kilkenny, Tullamore, Monaghan, Dundalk, Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. You can see what's in store for you and pick out where you're going to end up. inua.ie.
Fantastic.
Right, Bridget, good luck with the bacon and cabbage.
Thanks for
lovely talking to you. Well
Thank
done.
You.
See you. Bye. Cheers. Bye.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Here we go. Bada Benny Dead. It's like Christmas, the Eurovision, yes. Come on. Immerse yourself in it. Tomorrow we'll be live in Liverpool for semi-final one of the Eurovision Song Contest. All eyes are on Wild Youth and their song We Are One. What can we expect? Well, I'm joined on the phone by Niamh Kavanagh. Hello, Niamh.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Eurovision winner.
I'm nearly standing to attention in my car.
Yes, I know. Yeah. And Brian Kennedy.
In a second, you hear it. You just want to stand up and go, that's it now.
Brian Kennedy is in studio as well.
Listen, can we just say, how exciting is it to have Eurovision royalty on the phone? Niamh, where are you in the world?
Well, I'm actually in Dublin. I'm not going to Liverpool.
No, make it up. Make it up. Where are you? Try that again. Where are you, Niamh?
I'm in Bali.
There you go. That's better. Thank you.
Great. Niamh. Brian Kennedy's just back from Liverpool, so we're going to go to him first. He's going to, you know, paint a picture of what it's like over there.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, Liverpool has become Eurovision central, of course. Loads of parties going on. There's a huge big, there are a massive kind of huge birds around. You know, like they used to put like big bulls around cities and things. Now they have these big doves, the doves of peace.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that's bedecked. Liverpool is bedecked with Eurovision glamour.
Were you in the stadium?
I had a look outside. No, I mean, it's one thing, as Niamh knows, you know, when you're part of something, then you can't help be part of it. But when you're not, I don't enjoy being in the audience, for example, at other people's gigs. Just generally.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
And wouldn't you agree, Niamh? I mean, I'd rather...
Eurovision's a long show to sit through unless you have a reason to be there.
Yeah. You're getting the full truth today.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Warts and all.
I'm not going to lie. I've only ever really gone to Eurovision when I have something to do.
You did it twice, though. That's unusual.
Yes, I did.
Will we go back to Mill Street just for a moment? Because we have to. We have to
do this.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What a singer.
It stands the test of time.
What a singer.
Brian.
I mean, that's a live vocal.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Amazing.
Just telling you.
What are you laughing at, Niamh Kavanagh?
I'm laughing. It's like 30 years later, and I still remember when I recorded that, how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of it, I was sitting there going, that's amazing.
Yes.
And then I also thought, I'm going to have to sing that live.
No, you did sing it live.
I've heard you sing it live. No bother to you.
Amazing. And Brian Kennedy.
Yes, Ray Darcy.
You got to whatever, was it 9th or 10th?
10th and had a 1 in it, as I always said. Yes.
Yes, and did you know, I've only read this today because I did the Eurovision Song Contest quiz on independent.ie.
Okay.
I got 60%.
Right. So, are you going to tell me about the number 1,000?
Yes.
Ah, it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, so this was the number, the 1,000th.
My entry
song.
Was the 1,000th entry in the whole competition. I didn't know that until that was. Never tender, always rough. It was never enough
for me. In the dead of the night.
Yeah. Great song.
Turned out good, that one.
Yeah.
So
my
good.
Goodness, it brings
so
it all back, as you say, Niamh, doesn't it? I remember every time we rehearsed, I kept changing the last note. It just kept getting higher and higher and higher. And then I decided to go down on one knee for the crack. And my goodness, remember the controversy?
We put it to our listeners. Yeah, should he go down on one knee or not?
I know. And I think I was channeling somebody. I can't remember who. I don't know.
Here's the thing.
It's something.
Niamh, when you were in it, you didn't have to qualify out of a semi-final. You did, Brian.
I did, yes, exactly.
And people will know that we have to qualify out of the semi-final. And we're in the first semi-final. And it's tomorrow night.
Yes.
It's been called the semi-final of death. That's what it's been called.
I see.
Yeah. we've got to that stage. Have we got to that stage, Brian, where that's a victory if we get out of the semi-final?
It's a massive victory. Of course it is, because we've just done so poorly over the years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Wild Youth, I think, have one great thing in their favour, and that's their Wild Youth, you know, for goodness sake. I mean, that's the only thing. One of the most important instruments on that stage is attitude, is confidence. Go out there and take over and own that stage, you know, own that arena.
It can change actually very easily because what happens is you, they go in with this preconceived idea of what's going to happen, and then the big stage changes everything.
Because you've suddenly got like 30,000 people physically in front of you. And as you know, Niamh, they rehearse you until you are a pool of sweat on the floor. I know it's only three minutes, but it's extremely intense.
Yeah, well, there's the thing. For both, the question I want to ask both of you, is it over-rehearsed, do you think? And how do you fight that?
You're always at the edge of being fabulous, aren't you, Brian?
The difficulty is, you see, these days, is that every moment of your existence is filmed from the second you arrive, for all the extras on the DVDs and all that, and every rehearsal is, and so on. And I stopped being Brian Kennedy. I was suddenly Ireland everywhere I went.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, here comes Ireland. Right. Hello, Ireland. And so it's never lost on you that you are representing the country. You know, can't fall around drunk.
And I did have to qualify in 2010.
So
we did the second semi-final, which meant I did 8 shows in a row.
Yeah, wow. That's an awful lot.
That's a Thursday, and then you have to perform again on the and that, with all the dress rehearsals as well.
That's right.
But the dress rehearsals, like, you literally do 4 shows for each of the one performances that you do.
And how do you think the lads are feeling now? You know, because they've been over there a while. They did a dress rehearsal today. They're doing another one tomorrow. Maybe 2 today. And just from their looking at them, their sort of body language is saying that they're growing in confidence.
Good. They should do.
Yeah,
because they're great. And I know that they can go and own that stage. It's in the lap of the gods after that. So don't pay attention to any of that stuff. Just go out and make us proud. And anything that happens beyond that is just for other people to decide, not us.
Yeah.
You know, we should be proud of that.
There's 15 songs tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. 10 qualify for the final.
Do you know that I was the last one to qualify? So we were right up to the wire.
Yeah.
And then I won't say it out loud on the live on the radio, of course, but if you go to your Google machine, your YouTube, and finally they go, and finally, number 10, going through to the final, Ireland! And I say the next two words, thank
you're right.
Look,
yes.
It rhymes with. And so have a look at that on YouTube.
All the memories.
All the lovely memories.
So Wild Youth will be singing this song tomorrow night. We might be
Well, I will be.
Now, are you conscious of the flags? There wasn't so much flag waving in your day, Niamh, but the second time round, probably.
Yeah, a lot more the second time round. Yes. A lot of people fainting in front of me, actually, the second time round, because you're a returning queen. But, you know, to be honest with you, it was very exciting, a much bigger arena the second time round.
Yeah.
So it was much more invested. Listen, the energy is fantastic in the room when you go into it. And I'm hoping the guys are just absorbing every second of what's happening, because it's a magnificent thing.
It is.
Hundreds of millions of people are going to look at them. They only need 1% of people to like them to go.
That's
like
true.
Even
that's
their likes on social media go up.
The last time we were talking to you, Brian,
the
last time we were talking to Brian, Niamh, was the day of the National Song Contest on the Late Late Show.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you were talking to us. I think you were you liked Wild Youth, as far as I can remember.
Me? Oh, I did. Well, yes. we guessed that they would definitely win.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the outfits alone, for goodness sake. I mean, who else can rock a gold onesie other than the lead singer of Wild Youth? I mean, you need youth on your side.
He has a selection of them.
He has a selection of them. And I love it. I'm there for it.
The interesting thing that I noted on that night, because I haven't spoken to you since,
yes,
was that there were three. There was the televote, there was a national jury and an international jury.
Mm-hmm.
And Wild Youth didn't get the top score from the international jury.
Interesting.
Yes.
And so maybe it's a grower.
Yes,
the song.
Connolly got the 12 from the international jury on the night on the Late Late Show. Wild Youth got 10, they came second. And then from the national jury here, they got 12. And the televote, they got 12. Tomorrow night, it's all televote. There's no jury tomorrow night. There isn't the grand final.
That's a big change. Yeah, that's a very big change. So it'll be the first year that's happened.
It'd be all about making an impression. And that 3 minutes.
You get 3 minutes to make an impression. That's the pressure's on. But, you know, that's the nature of that competition.
Well, speaking of competition, the big competition is Sweden. And this is multifactorial because not only is she a returning queen of Eurovision, if they win, and they're still tipping around the favourites, then they will match our 7 Eurovision
will
wins.
Will they?
Yes. They're currently at 6, we're at 7. And this is Loreen and Tattoo. When the stars align, then I'll be there. No one will care about the
someone is to be loved. And all I care about is you. Is that going to be like in the What do you think of that, Niamh?
Well, she knows how to do it. There's no doubt about it. But I think Finland are kind of just hedging around there. If they kind of came out and did what they're going to do, you'd be surprised. People are reacting to Finland in a very strong way.
It's funny that you say that, because do you remember Lordi won the year I did it and they were Finnish?
Yes.
Do you remember the Monsters?
This is the Finnish one. This is the Finnish one. Korea and Cha Cha Cha.
It's like two different songs together. No, it's like two different songs together. Yeah. But the point is, they're catching people's imagination. Yeah. If they go out and do something quirky enough on the stage, and you just never know what's
going to happen. That's the thing about the Swedish entry. It's got a little bit of quirk in there, hasn't it? That little. Well,
no doubt about it.
I was going through the videos today, and Korea is wearing a PVC thing. What do they call those things?
Codpiece?
Yeah, that's it.
You're welcome.
Cameo used to wear them. Remember, Cameo used to wear them.
I was thinking, what's Ray trying to do there? Oh, yeah, codpiece. That's right.
You went straight to the codpiece there, Brian. Yes, it's kind of a funny thing, actually.
I can't get it out of my mind now. Oh, no.
And then they have the big green thing on the top, you know, this big green kind of bolero thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's very striking. And if they stage that right, it could capture people. You just don't know what people are. And we tend to think about the fans and all, but actually come the final, it's the majority of the public that will decide that.
Yes, and they're both in our semi-final tomorrow.
Okay.
They're saying that there are 5 surefire qualifiers.
Sure.
You know, so they're
going to go in. Are we in that surefire list?
No, we're not.
According to who?
Well, according to the fans.
Right.
You know this, and you know this, Niamh, as well. There are hundreds of Eurovision fan sites.
They're obsessives. It's not even fandom. It's like it's fanaticism. They put
that's
the fan
the word
in fanatic.
Yeah. Comes from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're I think there's growing support for Wild Youth.
Oh,
but
good.
At the beginning, it wasn't there. So as you say, a grower.
Graham Norton, it's becoming a grower with him, isn't that right?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. France.
The other thing I would say, even if Sweden do win, you know, they're going to eventually match us because they're like always up and around. But no one will win 3 years in a row again. It's nearly impossible to win consecutively, but 3 times. So, myself, Paul and Charlie and Linda are holding on to that, like...
And Emer, of course, our last winner. Yeah.
Here's a question for you. When was the last time Ireland got a 12 point?
Oh.
Well, there's an interesting...
Was it Ryan O'Shaughnessy?
No.
Should have, though. Really good.
It was Jedward back in 2011.
Oh, stop it, really?
Yeah, for lipstick.
They got a 12 point.
So that means it's 12 years since Ireland got a 12 point.
Wow.
Well, maybe we're due one, then.
Yeah, we are due one. Irlande, 12 points.
Are you listening, Eurovision land? We need 12 points.
Niamh sang a Eurovision song on Saturday night in Dreacht. Fabulous show. She's even better now. Thanks, Celine and Jim.
I would agree with that. I think your voice is even better now.
Yeah. And I remember Niamh's Eurovision victory so well, the next day the Sunday newspaper had an ad from the bank where Niamh worked. And on the front page, bottom right hand corner, it stated, "Congratulations, Niamh, take Monday off."
So generous.
The, that's great.
Well, the best part was that when they, on the Monday, they had another ad after I won, and it said, "Take Tuesday off as well."
Hey, tell Wild U to make sure they make the lyrics heard clearly.
Okay.
Right, that's advice from somebody.
About that's very important. Pronunciation is very important.
Because the theme of the song is very strong. It's all about inclusivity.
Exactly.
Which the Eurovision, I think, stands for inclusivity long before the word inclusivity
you
was being bandied about.
Right? I mean, that's the nature of it. It's every country. I mean, what I used to love as a little kid watching it, which you'd suddenly hear somebody singing in Slovakian or something. You'd never heard that before. Yes. You know, especially not in the Falls Road.
So
inclusivity is absolutely the heart of it, I think.
Yeah. So France, they don't have to take part in any of the semifinals. Mm-hmm. Neither do the UK. But both of them are up in the top five when it comes to the betting. Course. So this is the French one. Chanter la grande France. Evidently.
Well, great voice.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. And I always love France brings something different to the table all the time. Yeah. They've got something about it.
There's always a confidence. They're always comfortable in their skins, aren't they? They're not trying to be anybody other than
the
French.
Right. Yes. That's right, exactly.
Exactly
and
right.
I think that's part of our problem all the time. We're trying to be somebody else.
Do you think?
Sometimes. I think
we definitely should stop chasing it. Definitely.
Just relax.
We've won it seven times because, you know, that's a hard thing to shake off, isn't it?
Do you know who we had in last week? And this is for next year, because we'll be supporting Wild Youth tomorrow and we'll be there.
Absolutely.
And they'll be with us.
Of course.
Shobsy, have you heard him?
Are you joking me? I think he's one of the most exciting voices to come out of Ireland in a very long time.
Now, if we
met him recently in the street, funnily enough.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Amazing. If we could start convincing him to the Eurovision for next year and get...
Yeah. Where does he live? Where does he live?
He lives in Dublin. He lives in Dublin. But yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, Ray. I think he's a really exciting singer.
Shobsy, Niamh Kavanagh here.
Yeah, hi. Niamh, you and me will go round. Yeah, exactly. And Linda Martin. Imagine. Shobsy, do you want a dog?
Oh, no.
Do you want a wee dog?
I know. I was working with her.
Okay, quickly.
Exactly.
Are we going to get out of the semi-final? Niamh?
I hope so. I don't know.
Brian?
Yes, I'm an optimist.
Okay, right. Join us tomorrow, 3:00, live from Liverpool. Thanks very much, Niamh Kavanagh. Thanks very much, Brian Kennedy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Where are we here? There it is there.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.